You know, this story is a very well-known story. We probably have been hearing it from the time that we were children. Perhaps if we were raised in the church, it was in catechism class, and then we heard it in church periodically as we go through the lessons every 3 years, and we study from the Gospel of Luke. This story that we call the story of the Good Samaritan. The man was very kind. And usually, particularly as children, that's what we take out of the story. That we're supposed to be kind to one another and even kind to strangers. That's a very good lesson for young people to learn. It is true. But maybe, just maybe, there's more to it than just being kind to one another. That often happens in the scriptures. That, you know, we sort of boil it and distill it down to one little kind of idea, and we never quite take the time or the energy or the resources to tear it all apart and to get down into the nitty-gritty of what the gospel writer is trying to tell us about Jesus and the teaching of Jesus. So that's what we'd like to do a little bit today. You know, this Samaritan, notice what we call him. We call him the Good Samaritan. As if all the other Samaritans are bad Samaritans. And, you know, in the time of Jesus, in the time of the Jewish parts of Palestine, that was exactly true. They all thought that the Samaritans were bad. Because, you see, the Samaritans were, by some standards, we might call them half-breeds. They had departed from the Jewish tradition. They still worshiped the God that the Jewish people worshiped, and so on, but they married into the native population, the Canaanites who were there over time, and they sort of watered down their lineage. And also, they would say, the Jews from Jerusalem would say, they even watered down their religious observance. They did not do temple sacrifice because they were worshiping in other places in the north part of what we now call the nation of Israel. These were members of perhaps the 10 tribes, what we call the 10 lost tribes, and somehow they got all mixed up with the locals. And so they were seen to be less than pure. They were not the right kind of people. And so they were to be avoided. Now, another piece that we might want to know is this road that they're traveling is obviously in Jewish territory. Because what do we see? We see a Levite, a temple priest, and another priest coming down the road. That meant they're going from some place down to Jerusalem. From Jericho to Jerusalem was the road, actually. And these are all in the normally considered the Jewish parts of Palestine at the time. But this road was kind of like what we have in some of our own communities in our cities. Like, I live in Harrisburg, as you know. And, you know, from the time that I moved there nearly 20 years ago, I keep hearing about not going up to Allison Hill. Now, our neighborhood borders on Allison Hill, so you kind of got to go through it to get anywhere if you're going anywhere west of where we are. Unless you want to go all the way around. There are people who would do that. They're so afraid of what's there. And the truth is, yeah, some shady things go on in that neighborhood, in that region of the city. But usually only after dark. During the day, it's just like any other neighborhood in the city. Well, at least any other poor neighborhood in the city. And it is perfectly all right to drive through, to go from one place to the other. I often take shortcuts through there, so I know the streets fairly well. But I wouldn't, and I would recommend that any of my guests would not take a walk through that particular part of town, on particular streets in that part of town, after dark. That's the kind of road we're talking about here. It's a place where you went down, you went back and forth, pretty much hoping that you would not be beset by robbers, which is exactly what happened to this man who was so unfortunate as to be robbed and beaten to within an inch of his life. Probably a Jewish person. Interestingly, it was the priest and the Levite who walked beyond it. In fact, they went to the other side of the road. So afraid were they that they would become unclean, because obviously, having been beaten to a bloody pulp, he was bloody, and blood would make them unclean if they were going on their way to serve in the temple. Okay? So they're doing what they're supposed to do, or so we think. But here comes this Samaritan, this half-breed, sort of those kind of people you don't want to associate with. They're not of true religion. They've got maybe, you might think, lesser qualities. So they're the people you want to avoid. Also, the kind of people that you want to push to the edge of polite society. Well, we all have them in our lives. You know, they're a class of people usually, or a certain group from a certain neighborhood, or from a certain city, or a certain region. We all know, we all do that, whether it's, you know, the sports teams that we root for, or it's even something more serious than that. For example, I live in Harrisburg, as I mentioned. You know, that's the capital of the Commonwealth. I don't know how many times I've heard big protests there in front of the Capitol. Kick the bums out. Get rid of them all. Put new people in there, people of integrity and ethics. But the bottom line is, if you go to talk to any one of those people that are protesting, more than likely they're going to say this: oh, kick them all out, except for my bum. I like my bum. He or she is a good person. And pretty soon you don't get much of anything accomplished. Maybe that's why this is a good Samaritan. Maybe he's the one Samaritan in our experience, in Jesus' experience, who, you know, should not be treated like all the other Samaritans. But that really doesn't matter, does it? Because this is the man who saw someone in dire need, saw someone who had been robbed and beaten to a bloody pulp. And he is the one, this half-breed, who goes and takes care of him. Now, the scripture says that he was motivated to do so out of pity. Now, that's a word I'd like to change a little bit. I'm not actually changing the word in Holy Scripture. Translations are what they are, sometimes they're more accurate than others. But the word pity, as we use it in our 21st century, I should say, language, is the kind of thing where we, if you really think of it, when we have pity on somebody, we're kind of looking down. You know, they're less fortunate than we are. And so we have pity on them. But the word that is really used, and probably would more accurately translate the scripture in its original language, it would be another word that is related, but it's slightly different. And that is the word compassion. So Jesus is telling the story, and substitute that word into the story for a moment, and he said, and the man was moved with compassion for him. Now, what is compassion? It's a compound word, a little bit of sort of an English lesson here. It's got two parts to it. One of it is the first part, which is the Latin root for with. Then we have the word passio, or passion. What is a passion? Sometimes we associate that with certain drives that we have. But it really, all it really means is about having deep feelings deep down inside. For example, when we say, I'm passionate about chocolate, or I'm passionate about ice cream, or I'm passionate about my sports team, or I'm passionate about whatever it is, if it means that you really, really deep down inside inside have a deep feeling for what's going on. So, if this man was moved with compassion, he was moved because he felt deeply for this man. Now, the notion is with passion. With passion. The whole concept comes together when we think of the word empathy. And in fact, perhaps this Samaritan, this half-breed, this sort of marginalized person, maybe he himself on this road had been beaten and robbed. So he really gets what's going on with this poor man. Perhaps, not beaten and robbed, but as a Samaritan, having to do business in that Jewish part of Palestine, he was constantly pushed to the side. Kind of like when you have to do business with somebody, you really don't like them, you just do your business and then you never associate with them again. Until the next time you have to do business with them. Maybe it was that kind of thing. He knew what it meant to be ignored, to be pushed away, to be hurt in his heart. In his ego. Whatever it is, somehow this Samaritan has this deep feeling with this man, this unfortunate man who has been robbed and beaten within an inch of his life. So there's the story. And Jesus said, as the lawyer answered, "This is your name." But the lawyer said, "Love your neighbor as yourself." And he further wanted to justify himself. He said, "Well, just who is my neighbor?" And this is how Jesus answered his question. He didn't simply say the person who lives next to you, or the person who lives in your community, or somebody who lives in the next town. There are, you know, people who think like you and act like you and dress like you and speak like you. You know, those are your neighbors, to be sure. But he says, there's more. It's like the Samaritan, the good Samaritan, as opposed to the bad. Well, they were all Samaritans. And this good one, he's the one that we didn't want to drink. And so we gave him that wonderful. Think about it. Who is your neighbor? Now, this is where I usually get into a little bit of trouble. I get myself into a little bit of hot water when I start talking like I'm about to talk. Everybody loves, you know, Bible lessons. That's great. But to stretch it out, to be able to dig through it and begin to understand, how does this apply in our lives today? Well, if we've been at all paying attention to the news of late, we've been seeing horrible things happening at our nation's southern border. We've been seeing people flood the border and want access to this nation of ours, and we have erected a sort of moral wall there that says, you cannot come in. And if you do, we are going to detain you, and we are going to incarcerate you. We're going to put you in a pen. Not the pen, but a pen. We're going to take you and we're going to treat you like you are less of a person. Kind of like the Jews treated the Samaritan. We are going to take you, and because we're overwhelmed, the richest, most powerful nation in the world is being overwhelmed by several thousand people who want access to what we have. And why do they want to do it? And maybe therein is the issue. Because if we really want to dig down in it, we see in that triumvirate of nations, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Costa Rica, Honduras. Horrible conditions. I watched an interview with a mother several weeks ago where the interviewer asked her, why did you do this? Why did you make this long and horrible journey to want to come to the United States? And she said this. She said, a representative of the cartel, the gang who ran the drug cartel, came to our house, knocked on the door, and said, your son needs to come with me. Now, the boy was about 12 years old. And if you don't let him come with me, I will kill him, you, and the rest of your family. Now, what if somebody came to your door and said that? What would you do? Would you just say, okay? Or would you say, you can't have him, and then, for horrible fear, every knock at the door, every noise outside, you'd be jumping for fear? And if you had the choice of staying there or simply leaving and going wherever you could go, where there would be safety, where there would be a way of living that is not overrun by fear, wouldn't you go there? But that's what this woman did. But why the United States? Why don't you go to Mexico? Or go south into Colombia or someplace like that? Well, think about it. From the time our nation was founded, we have been talking about this great city on a hill. The great city on the hill, the light for the rest of the world. Now, if that means anything to anybody, it means that people who are in unfortunate circumstances, who are within an inch of their life, are going to want to go there. They're going to go to the place where they can make the best life. They're going to go to the place where they can have the most freedom. They're going to want to go to the place that has been held out as a promise. Because if you stop to think about it, unless you are a Native American, each and every person in this room did not come from the United States. Maybe not the moment, but at least generations ago, three generations in my father's family, they came from another land. And they came to this land of promise, this shining city on a hill. And they were able to make a life for themselves so that I'm here today, reaping the benefits of living in a free society. A free society where we are able to choose the way of life that we want to live. That we are able to contribute by giving our own work and effort to make this world a better place. We are all refugees in that sense. We are all immigrants. But we forget that. Sometimes we think we're the Native Americans. We are far from it. Brothers and sisters, there was a lot of talk a few weeks ago about all these stories about the horrific conditions in which people were being held at the border. That was all false. It was overblowing some facts and making them too big. Until just last week, none other than the Vice President of the United States went down there and invited the press to accompany him into one of the holding centers. And you could see for yourself, with cameras rolling and microphones open, what's going on there. Now, the reason that they gave for doing this was so that the rest of the world could see what's going on and how terrible the conditions are. And seeing those terrible conditions, they would not come. Well, if you had a choice of living in those terrible conditions and your life, which would you take? Deterrence doesn't work. If in fact it did, we'd never have murder in our society. The death penalty or lifetime incarceration, it's enough to deter me. Well, there are times when I want to kill somebody, that's pretty sure, but not really. And so if I'm really confronted with that, it's really not a deterrent for me, because I don't consider the consequences when saying, no, I shouldn't kill somebody. It's contrary to my values. It's contrary to the law and the will of God. Why then are we doing what we are doing? And I say we. Because another thing about our nation is, in the words, eloquent words of Abraham Lincoln, which are so often quoted, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. That means that any act that our government accomplishes with intent is you acting. So every time someone is given a situation in which they are suffering at our border, it is you who are doing it. It is we who are doing it, all of us. We can't simply push it off and walk on the other side of the road. We simply can't turn the channel when it becomes too uncomfortable to watch. That's walking on the other side of the road. We can't simply ignore it and hope it goes away, because then we are the priests and the Levites. Jesus says, the one who is the neighbor to the man is the one who does something about it. What are we doing about it? What can we do? Us poor little old people. We're just one person. It's your government. You have every opportunity to make your feelings known about this. You have every opportunity to call or to write or to email a representative in our government, whether it's the president, the vice president, the senators, the House of Representatives, it makes no difference. You can do them all. And express, if it is bothering you, what's going on. It doesn't bother you that a cell that is this, or a pen, really, that is designed to hold 70 people maximum is actually holding 235 plus. So much so that the adults have no place actually to lay down. Or does it bother you that because a couple of children, young boys, young teenagers, perhaps, complained about something, so their sleeping mats and pillows were taken away, and they were told to sleep on the concrete so that they could learn about what good things they had. They could stop complaining. But me and you would never complain about anything, would you? Or anything. We know young people. We all complain. We complain all the time. They do too. And this is the way to treat them. This is being done in your name. This is the government of the United States of America, the most wealthy, the most powerful nation in the world. This is how we treat our neighbor. And if you go along with that, God bless you. But simply to say, I'm powerless, I can't do anything, that is to simply walk the other side with it. There is active suffering going on within our own borders, intentionally inflicted by our government. There are no easy answers to this, it is true, and I admit that. But, this is not the answer. What can we do as the most powerful, most wealthy nation in the world? What could we do? Did you know that several weeks ago, when it was the information came out that the children lacked soap, toothbrushes, and toothpaste, that many, many churches took up collections, both money and in kind, and shipped supplies to the southern border? And those supplies were refused. They were refused. Because they wanted the people to suffer. This is being done in your name. This is a problem. It is a moral problem. There is a crisis at the border, I agree. There is a problem that we have to solve. We, who sent men to the moon and brought them back safely, we can't figure this out. What are we going to do? It's time. It's time to end this atrocity. These are developing into crimes against humanity. Just because we're Americans does not mean we can't commit those kinds of crimes. Just because we are Americans does not mean that we can't fool ourselves into thinking that this is for the good of all. It is not. This story that Jesus told tells us that. This story that Jesus told says that our neighbor is the one that we least like. But the neighbor is really the one who actually does something to alleviate suffering, and does so out of compassion, deep feelings, and understanding of what people are going through. We could enumerate any number of things that are going on. And they've been proven. Not because our own vice president was there with cameras rolling, with open microphones, but not reaching the desired effects. Rather, it simply confirmed all the stories we've been hearing. So they're all true, at least most of them. Maybe some exaggeration, no doubt. But in fact, in its root, it's true. And so I simply lay before you today a question. Who is your neighbor? How will you react when you see someone suffering? How will you act when your neighbor is in trouble? What will you do?